Okay, I'd like to call this meeting to order. We will take the roll. Commissioner Ward?
Here.
Commissioner Liu?
Here.
Commissioner Han?
Here.
Commissioner Studley is an excused absence today. She cannot make it. The first item on the agenda is public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission.
Thank you. Honorable Commissioners, I'm Dr. Melanek from the Medical Examiner's Office. During the past 5 months, my private practice work has been denied in 6 cases, none of which would have been created a conflict for the City and County of San Francisco. They involve other jurisdictions in the Bay Area and were criminal complaints or civil actions which have no interest or bearing on any relationships with the City and County. In the past, assistant medical examiners have testified in these jurisdictions without any adverse effects, and I have not been given a good reason for why these private practice cases have been denied, only been told that there is a possibility that there might be potentially an adverse outcome. This continued SIA policy is damaging the financial and professional standing of the assistant medical examiners at the OCME. Dr. John Smith recently resigned because of this unfair AWD policy. No other employees of GSA have their testimony restricted. No other doctors employed by the city and county have these types of restriction on their private practice. When we testify, it is in the public interest, and since several of you have civil rights background, you understand that this is why testimonial speech is afforded the highest protection under the law. The possibility of an adverse outcome is an insufficient reason for suppression of testimony in cases that have come before the courts and have given you copies of the case law. Outside testimony is now being denied based on locations in the San Francisco Bay Area. However, even as of a few months ago, cases in the Bay Area were approved. Dr. Hart has said she finds it difficult to make a determination because relationships, conflict of interest, or adverse consequences have not been defined for her, and she can only guess at what the city disapproves on a case-by-case basis. Dr. Hart has mentioned on several occasions that the basis for the implementation of the AWD was a response by the city to my testimony in the case Pecan v. San Mateo. Dr. Hart knew in advance and initially approved my involvement in this case, but then voiced concerns about potential adverse consequences to the city. These concerns were discussed in a meeting with UAPD representatives and the previous city administrator, who stated that he feared adverse publicity as a result of outside testimony. There was never any negative publicity, and there were never any adverse consequences to CCSF for my involvement as an expert witness in that case, nor from the involvement of other assistant medical examiners or other employees at the OCME in any other outside cases. When I testified, it was as a retained expert and not as a representative of the city, and I have provided you an excerpt of the transcript where I say so. The four San Francisco assistant medical examiners and also the toxicologist and other people who this applies to, we still stand by our original request that the SIA should be revised to remove the confusing, unworkable, and unfair AWD process. Since it appears that city administration does not intend to change the SIA and has refused to come to any mutual agreement with us or our union representatives, it is up to you, the Ethics Commission, to weigh in on the matter. It is, after all, a matter of both ethics and the law. When the administration of the city and county restricts the testimonial speech of its employees on their own time. Our submitted letter is signed by 3 assistant MEs and contains all the supportive documents, including copies of the case law. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Hal Smith. I want to thank, first of all, you, you're examining the civil grand jury report so carefully during your July and August meetings. One thing I noticed in your August minutes is that you had approved it, approved the civil grand jury response on a 5-0 with modifications. It's just I could not find anywhere on the website the final report on what was decided with the modifications. So I'm wondering if you would put that on your website. That would be helpful. Okay. Thank you.
Sir, I'm not sure I quite understand what you're suggesting.
Your response to the civil grand jury. Last month it was approved on a 5-0 vote. It said, but with modifications. But yet I have not seen, maybe Mr. St. Croix, you have it somewhere.
Yeah, it should be on the website. It will be.
Okay, I have not seen it on the website.
It'll be there tomorrow.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm Alan Grossman. I was dismayed to see there was nothing on the agenda or in the executive director's report or in his draft to the, I think this is the Board of Supervisors regarding the proposed sunshine regulations. I think given the grand jury report and the other imperatives regarding cases that have been referred to the commission by the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force, that this should have the highest priority, the highest. There are currently 9 cases pending before the commission that have been referred to it by the task force, some going back to, most actually going back to August of 2010. That's over a year. I think the problem has been accentuated because Mr. St. Croix insists on following regulations that are not appropriate or applicable to sunshine cases, and that's very clear. 2 years ago, when I filed the lawsuit for copies of public records that were claimed to be confidential, it was based upon a provision in the charter that Mr. St. Croix relied on, which was clearly not applicable to open government cases that were being handled by the commission. And he and his staff continue to persist to deal with those referred cases on the same basis, on the same regulations that have been inapplicable and admittedly so for over 2 years. And I think it's time to deal with that. But in addition to which, there's no need for investigations. You know, the deferral to the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force work has also been recognized, and it's part, I think, of the proposed regulations. So there's no reason to delay it for investigations. Given all of that, I think it's time to address that and promptly. Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is consideration of provisions in the Statement of Incompatible Activities governing officers and employees of the Office of Chief Medical Examiner. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to introduce this? Ms. Ng, would you like to introduce this matter?
Yes. Staff has prepared a short memo just providing some brief background on this. Briefly, in April of this year, the Commission considered a draft formal written advice request from Dr. Melnick, who just testified. And during the meeting, she withdrew her request for advice, but the Commission asked that staff meet informally with GSA to consider the possibility of amending that provision in the SIA that pertains to the officers and employees of the medical examiner's office. Staff has done that. Staff has also conducted some research on this. I know that Acting City Administrator Amy Brown is here, and she would be here to testify and provide information to the commission.
Before we hear from Ms. Brown, does the commission have jurisdiction to amend this on her own?
What has happened in the past is the commission has deferred to the departments. Because the commission believes, but the commission and staff has believed that the department heads are generally the people who are most knowledgeable about what may or may not be incompatible or inconsistent with an employee's duties. So we have worked closely with department heads. We have not unilaterally made any changes. It's always in conjunction with working with departments.
Could we?
Possibly, yes.
Okay. Ms. Brown.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Amy Brown. I have the privilege of serving the city as the acting city administrator this year. during the time that our former city administrator is serving as mayor for the last year of Mayor Newsom's term. I know that you have seen the letter that I sent. You have the letter in front of you from the Dr. Melnick's appeal that I sent on February 1st, 2011. I do want to reiterate that we stand by the reasons set forth in that letter for the denial of that request. There are several reasons that the SIA was adopted the way that it was back in, let me get the year right, I think it was 2008 that they all became effective. Yes, okay, thank you. First, all expert testimony is discoverable, and an assistant medical examiner's testimony in a case for an entity other than the city and county of San Francisco could impact the assistant medical examiner's ability to testify credibly in the course and scope of his or her work for the city. Testifying in court for the city is an essential function of an assistant medical examiner's job. That is not the case for other GSA employees. In fact, it's highly unusual and highly unlikely that other GSA employees end up testifying in court as part of their job duties. If one judge concludes that an AME lacks credibility or expertise, that could forever limit the value of that AME's testimony in city cases for which we're paying that AME to be able to render.
the question. This will go down the road.
Okay.
Oh, sounds like we're back.
This is back on. Yeah. All right. I can stop shouting at you. Okay. Similarly, an AME's prior testimony could be problematic in future city and county cases if that prior testimony is inconsistent with our own practices. Providing expert testimony can be time-consuming, preparing reports, attending depositions, trial testimony, and we are concerned that AME's outside work should not consume so much time that work for the OCME wouldn't get done, which has in the past been a problem at times for that office. And again, the sheer number of requests for outside employment from Dr. Melnick herself is an example of why that's a concern. Dr. Hart has a record of over 30 requests for advanced written determination. That's a really quite astounding amount of outside work, in my opinion, that's being requested to do. And I also want to note that only a little over 10% have actually been rejected. So we do approve far more than we disapprove. When AMEs serve as experts in outside cases, opposing attorneys seeking to challenge their credibility could well decide to focus on the office of the medical examiner here, making the OCME's practices an issue in the case or possibly resulting in extensive requests for records and information from the OCMA. We are particularly concerned about testimony in cases that would disrupt the operations of the OCME. The OCME and GSA have close interdependent working relationships with other public agencies that perform the same functions in other counties. San Mateo County is a perfect example of a very close interdependent relationship with lots of mutual aid agreements back and forth and a very close working relationship between the two counties by virtue of the particular geography that we have here. They are our only neighbor that's not separated from us by water and bridges and other things that make it more difficult to get to them. And again, the letter that you have before you denying that request dated February 1 sets forth some of those reasons because that wasn't, in fact, a San Mateo County case. The offices work together, share information, and sometimes take on work for one another when needed. There are frequently death investigation cases in which the incident occurs in another county, and the person eventually dies in San Francisco because of the type of healthcare facilities we have here, requiring cooperation to conduct an adequate investigation. We're concerned that an AME's testimony in cases involving other counties could strain those relationships and hinder the agency's ability to regularly rely on one another for expertise and assistance. The concern is especially acute because the OCME is a very small office with only a handful of doctors. In cases involving deaths or injuries in San Francisco, the OCME has jurisdiction, as you know, and an AME's outside testimony in such a case could interfere with the exercise of that authority or at least cause confusion about what role the AME is playing. I think that that has not been the subject of great disagreement. I don't think anyone's really arguing at this point that they should be allowed to serve as hired experts in cases in San Francisco. But I did just want to point that out, that that's also a source of concern for us. In order to avoid confusion that we've heard has resulted from enforcement of this SIA, Dr. Hart has worked with our human resources and our city attorneys to develop a six-question decision-making matrix in order to try and set forth clearly how decisions will be made when advance written determination requests are submitted. That has been shared with all the AMEs. I believe you may have a copy of that in front of you. I was planning on putting it up on the overhead, but since that's not working, I'm happy to get a copy to you if you have not seen that. We really are trying to make sure that we spell out what decision-making framework is there and be very clear about it and share that with the AMEs so that there isn't confusion. And we really have tried to strike a balance in crafting that decision-making matrix. Unless and until testimony involving counties or other governmental entities with whom we don't have that close working relationship right now causes credibility or operational problems, we have been approving requests. So, for example, we approved two recent ones from Dr. Melnick for testimony in cases that involved California counties, but not ones with whom we have a close working relationship. In doing so, I want to note that we're being significantly less restrictive than Los Angeles County, which doesn't allow expert testimony in any case in which any medical examiner from any county has issued a report. So that would be statewide. We are approving some that are in counties where we don't have that close working relationship. Again, unless and until it causes some other problem, because I do have concerns that it will. And our approach is pretty consistent with San Diego County. Finally, our SIA is consistent with the highest ethical standards, which I believe as a public employee is what we should all strive for. Not only should we be held to them, we should understand that public employment is a privilege and we should want to hold ourselves to them. I actually came out of the city attorney's office here, and I want to note that the city attorney's office doesn't allow its attorneys to do any outside legal representation. It is simply not allowed unless it's a family member, and only then with written approval from the city attorney's office. I think that that's actually pretty analogous, because it's another group of very highly trained, highly professional employees who are held to high ethical standards and also happen to be very highly paid. And I do want to note that it's a little hard for me personally to take the claims of hardship to heart in this case. I want to note that the assistant medical examiners are among some of the highest paid city employees that we have. Dr. Melnick, for example,'s current annual salary is $261,534. So I find it hard to really see the hardship that results from reasonable restrictions that protect the credibility and reputation of the San Francisco OCME. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and address you. I also appreciate your staff's courtesy in working with us over the last few months, and I'm happy to try and answer questions, and also want to acknowledge that our medical examiner, Dr. Amy Hart, is here as well if you have questions for her.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. While we have you here, do any of the commissioners have questions for Ms. Brown? Commissioner Han?
You've indicated that there is the potential for problems of a variety, given the close working relationship with San Mateo County. But my question is, have we in fact experienced these kinds of problems in the past? Are there examples of that, or precedents that have been set, or is this just a concern about the potentiality?
I have not personally experienced problems. I was not the city administrator at the time that there were cases, the Pecan case and others, were going on. It is my understanding that there were some discussions, that concerns were expressed from San Mateo County officials to officials here, but I was not personally involved in those conversations.
But we haven't actually, I mean, there isn't something tangible that has occurred in terms of reputation or legal issues, that tangible legal issues from which we have suffered as a result of this kind of testimony at this point.
Well, I mean, I certainly would take it. I think anything that makes our relationship with our closest neighboring county more difficult is not something that we want to strive to do. We want to try and prevent that. So I'm not sure I would say that nothing happened, because my understanding is that there were, again, some difficult and tense, it sounded like perhaps even angry would be an appropriate word, conversations with San Mateo County officials. In terms of tangible, you know, I pointed out language that I fear opens us up to possible credibility attacks in the future. I don't believe that that's actually happened, and I don't remember the date of that published Court of Appeal opinion. I don't think it's too old, but
in terms of the credibility of a medical examiner who's testifying, whether or not these professional organizations agree with the opinion of the expert witness, I mean, this is common. I mean, I would imagine that someone testifies as an expert, and other groups or individuals may or may not agree, and that this is common to all kinds of expert witnesses and really has no bearing on the organizations for which they may work full-time or be associated with.
Well, I would respectfully disagree that it has no bearing. I think it happens all the time. The job of the attorneys on the other side is to attack the credibility of those hired guns, those expert witnesses that are brought in. I disagree that it affects their credibility for their regular employer. I think it very much can. I think that's why entities like the city attorney's office restricts outside legal representation. I think it's why we pay these employees so highly, so that they don't have to go out and do that sort of thing to pay their mortgage. I absolutely think it can affect their credibility, reputation, professional reputation, and that could hurt the office, absolutely.
And one final question. Now, I understand that past practice in terms of expert testimony has been quite different and has only recently changed as a direct result of this San Mateo case. Is that correct?
Well, I would... it is correct that past practice was very different. I would trace it back even farther. I mean, there was a time in the not too distant past where none of us had these statements of incompatible activities. And I really applaud the Ethics Commission for making sure that all cities took a hard look. A lot of things used to happen that I think make us all shudder when we think about them now, and used to just be accepted as common practice. Again, I think we should be held to the highest possible standards as public employees. So when this was adopted in 2008, did we immediately start enforcing it the way that we are trying to enforce it now? No. It is true that that was the first step toward trying to hold everyone to a higher standard, but it did evolve over time, and certainly the problems that resulted from the San Mateo cases were the impetus for really trying to look at how we administer this, how we communicate it to the AMEs, resulting in that decision-making matrix that's been shared with everyone, and really trying to make sure that we have a standard approach that's communicated ahead of time and that we're very clear on expectations.
Any other questions for Commissioner Lee?
Hi, Ms. Brown. So what kind of as a follow-up to Commissioner Hand's initial question, in that six-part test, what is the measure that is used to determine whether potential testimony could interfere with a working relationship? It does seem kind of vague as a guideline. So how...
Well, the classic case is San Mateo because we are... just have so much interdependency there. We're the largest landowner in San Mateo County. We have all kinds of mutual aid. I mean, we just had the one-year anniversary of the San Bruno explosion and fires, for example. There were so many city and county agencies that responded there to offer mutual assistance. The same is true in the other direction. They lack some of the kinds of healthcare facilities that we have here, so events that occur there often end up being treated here in our city and county. So that is an example of an extremely interconnected relationship. The two advanced written determination requests that were just approved for Dr. Melanick, I believe one was in San Diego County, and the other was, a federal case in which... it was a branch of a federal entity that's different from any branch that operates here in the city and county of San Francisco. So examples where it seemed unlikely that, you know, certainly we don't have a close working relationship, not to say that we don't have a working relationship with San Diego County in some ways, because we're two of the urban counties in the state of California, but it's not as intertwined. It's not just about geographic proximity. There's a county that's not contiguous to us to the north that lacks a certain kind of facility, and so I think it's death of children that occurs there gets brought here for investigation. So it really is very specific to what the entity that's involved is. And it involves looking at, you know, what is the relationship with them. Now, having said that, there are other OCMEs, it hasn't happened here yet, where an AME testifying has resulted in that office being hit with subpoenas to produce all kinds of records, to use the practices of that office as a means of impeaching, and in effect, the practices of the office have become an issue in a case because an AME testified as an expert witness in that case. That hasn't happened here yet, but if it were to happen, that's an operational issue, that's a credibility issue, that might, I think, reasonably lead me to conclude that, you know, even if we don't have a close working relationship with another county, we just can't have the door open to that possibility.
You said that happened in other counties?
It has happened in other OCME offices, yes.
And you also said that, so the SIA and the six-part test that was designed, is it similar to San Diego? Is that what you said? San Diego's?
I don't know that they have that same kind of decision-making matrix. I think our approach, our attempt to try and balance and allow testimony in some instances is similar to how San Diego approaches it.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
As opposed to L.A., which just says if there's a medical examiner involved, you can't testify.
I see. Okay.
Any other questions for Ms. Brown? Ms. Brown, I have a couple questions. So I understand that procedurally there could be instances where Dr. Melnick or any other AME's description of San Francisco procedure could be used in a subsequent case in which that procedure were at issue. But as far as, again, your example with the appellate court decision does not ring true to me. I cannot imagine a judge permitting a lawyer to use factual testimony completely unrelated to the testimony at issue in a given case to impeach a witness, and I don't find that to be a credible argument.
I hope you're right.
with respect to the inconsistent procedure, that is more compelling, but that exists in any case. I mean, any case in which an AME testifies, you're going to have that situation. And so to me, this seems more of an issue of your judgment that the relationship with San Mateo is potentially at risk because of your AMEs testifying against the county. Is that really what this is about?
Well, I mean, to go back to your middle statement that you think it could call into effect, I'm going to paraphrase you and probably get it wrong. I mean, the other alternative is just not to allow outside testimony. I mean, and that's something we're certainly willing to consider. I think we're really trying to be fair and balanced here, and we're trying to allow some. But if the feedback is that it's too, I don't know, too discretionary, again, I'm paraphrasing and perhaps I'm misreading where you're going, but you know, we could just say none and create a very bright line rule that the only testimony you render is you know, for your employer, the city and county of San Francisco.
That's not where I'm going, but I certainly appreciate that is an option, not one that I would propound. Did San Mateo County ask you not to permit Dr. Melanie to take this case?
Again, I was not the city administrator at the time those discussions were happening, so it's all secondhand.
Okay.
I don't recall that was specifically stated to me.
That's very
I don't
ambiguous.
Recall the city administrator saying that request was made.
Is that something that Dr. Hart would know? Did you say she was here?
I believe the calls were directly to our former city administrator, so I do not know, but I'm certainly happy to invite her up if she knows.
Okay. I do want to hear from her if she has anything to add to that. I did have one other question, though, for you, Ms. Brown.
Certainly.
Is there any situation from your point of view in which it would be permissible for an AME to testify against San Mateo County?
I cannot think of one.
And how does San Mateo County, I guess you've described a couple instances about the close relationship between San Francisco and San Mateo. Do those same concerns exist with surrounding counties? I mean, there's Marin, there's obviously many other counties close by, and I'm given how vague the test is for determining whether or not one can testify, it's easy to see something like this continuing to grow and the exclusion to continue to grow based on something that's very difficult for an outside person to evaluate.
I am starting to like the bright line approach of just saying no in all instances. Absolutely, it extends to other counties. Marin would certainly be one, and Alameda County, absolutely.
So then are you also saying that you wouldn't permit testimony for Alameda and Marin?
I mean it's hard to answer a hypothetical, but probably not. We have recently denied one that came out of Alameda County.
Okay.
I mean, that is another county with whom we have many working relationships. Again, not as many as San Mateo. San Mateo's kind of the most extreme in terms of involvement. We're not the largest landowner in Alameda, although we do have a lot of land under the PUC's jurisdiction in Alameda County. We do serve as the water utility for big swaths of Alameda County. There certainly are a lot of close working relationships with them. We have mutual aid agreements with them. Lots of law enforcement back and forth.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Brown. Unless anybody else has any additional questions for Ms. Brown. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address you.
Ms. Hart, if you have anything you'd like to add, we'd appreciate hearing from you. Or at the very least, I think I'd like the answer to the question of whether San Mateo County contacted you, or whether you know whether San Mateo County contacted anyone in San Francisco suggesting that Dr. Melnick not take this case.
Which case are you talking about in particular? Is there one that you're asking? She took the Pecan case.
I assume it was the one that we've... that was the subject of your letter?
Wolkoff, that case?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Dr. Amy Hart. I'm the Chief Medical Examiner at the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner in San Francisco. And I appreciate you asking me to come before the commission to answer questions. I don't know the cases with the specificity that a lawyer does, so the Wolcott case does not bring any particular information to me that's helpful in responding. I can tell you that I don't have any specific knowledge of who contacted the city administrator or the city attorney's office or any other city agency regarding cases in San Mateo. I don't have any knowledge about anybody asking that Dr. Melnick specifically not be allowed to testify in a case.
Is there some agreement between the counties, some unwritten agreement that you won't permit your AMEs to testify against each other?
So the testimony is not the written agreement. What is different than at the time when I worked here under Dr. Stevens is that now the San Francisco, greater San Francisco Bay Area is looked at as a functional unit for mutual aid issues. And this is something that is probably not very well known to the assistant medical examiners, but very well known to the people who work with mutual aid and emergency response. And so the issue that's really changed is that our relationship with counties close to us, adjacent counties, has been expanded. And the expectation is these local counties, the greater San Francisco Bay Area counties, will work in conjunction with each other, especially in a time of disaster. So for me, as a chief medical examiner, having the responsibility to not only safeguard the citizens of the city and county of San Francisco and make sure that we have adequate response in a time of disaster, the relationships with the greater San Francisco Bay Area counties is the most important relationships for me on a day-to-day basis. And what happened from my perspective was when an assistant medical examiner went outside of the county to testify against another county, the direct impact to our department was a concern that the policies and practices of our department, the personnel within the department, and myself wouldn't be drawn into the case because of the need to defend or to prosecute that county. And I wasn't okay,
let me stop you there. Yes. But what about a case involving a vendor of a county, of San Mateo County? How far is this going to go?
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because part of this mutual aid type agreement that we have is actually not only in times of disaster, but also on a day-to-day basis. So when a county, such as San Mateo, has a death that, for example, has been transported to San Francisco for medical care, which, as Amy Brown mentioned, is not that uncommon of a scenario because of the geographic location of where the tertiary care centers are, it's necessary for the investigators in our office to gather information from like agencies and entities in San Mateo County in order to complete our investigation. So if an assistant medical examiner is testifying, I don't know, against a vendor, for example, that has a working relationship in San Mateo and in San Francisco, then that testimony, especially if it happens to be against that vendor, can strain the relationship that we have with that vendor who also works here and also works in San Mateo, making it so that it may not be possible for us to get the information we need in order to complete our case. So AMS specifically is, my understanding, also a city vendor. So that, again, a county employee testifying against them could not only strain our ability to get information from that particular vendor in San Mateo, but also in San Francisco.
Thank you, Ms. Hart. Yeah. Any other questions for Dr. Hart? Commissioners, would you like to discuss this first or hear public comment first? Is there a preference on this issue? Okay. Okay. So Commissioner Hand just mentioned, and I think I agree, that we'd like to hear public comment first before the commission deliberates.
Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Venus Azar. I'm an assistant medical examiner for the city and county San Francisco's Office of the Chief Medical Examiner. I've worked for this office for 11 years, 1 year longer than Dr. Hart. When I was hired by Dr. Stevens, I was hired at $138,000 a year, may have been $135,000. He had trouble keeping doctors. He had one doctor only with him at the time, Dr. Glenn Nazareno. Between the two of them, I believe they were alone for over a year, and the reason he gave me was that the pay was just not commensurate with him keeping doctors. They did increase our salary quite a bit. However, since that was brought up, other doctors, as doctors, we have a large debt. I mean, it can be hundreds of thousands of dollars. So to compare us with attorneys may or may not be fair. I don't know. It may be impossible to send your kid to college these days, but to just put a number on it is, you know, not fair. It isn't about the money, though, but that's not why Dr. Smith left. He left and took an $80,000 pay cut to go to Ventura County because of this. He did not find it fair. He found it unethical. He found that he was being lied to. He was our union steward. Having said that, since it was brought up that it would cause an undue burden on the city, the only time that's happened, I've been there 11 years, is when we've lost doctors. So when Dr. Hart became chief, it was Smith and I cutting only for about a year or at least half a year. That was horrible. When Dr. Smith left, it was Dr. Ellen Moffitt, who's here, she's in the back, Dr. Melnick and I, that was terrible. Dr. Happy is not here. He's only been with us for about a month. He's told us that had it not been for the cost of living, I'm sorry, for the salary, it would have been, he would not have come here. This is an expensive city. As a physician, you know, he's got debt, he's got other things, and just to bring this up, last week, the Marin County Coroner's Office, Chief Medical Examiner's father was dying. I don't know if he's still alive. He contacted Dr. Happy, asked him if he could help him out. Dr. Hart said no because of this. And she said that she would help that county if they could transport their bodies to our office, and she would charge them, I believe it was $3,000 a case, which is much more than Dr. Happy was going to try to help our colleague out. And in addition, Marin County has been hired, their previous chief, Dr. Ference, to come and testify on two of my cases. I don't know if they wanted him to impeach me or not. That doesn't matter. But they're able to do this to us, and yet we're not allowed to testify truthfully, under oath, in the capacity that, you know, as physicians, we do. So, and no other doctors in this city are barred from doing per diem work or outside consulting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ayanna Jenkins Tony, and I was the attorney for Selena Pecan in the San Mateo versus Selena Pecan versus San Mateo case. And I wanted to just talk to you a little bit about my efforts in retaining an expert in this case. It took me over a year to actually find a doctor that was willing to, first of all, examine the heart, because we weren't sure at the time whether or not the heart that was given to my client was in fact the heart of her son. So that was one of the main impetus for trying to get a doctor to examine this human heart that my client had in her possession. I contacted over 50 doctors. Several of the doctors were in academia, and so that presented a problem because, just to give you a brief background of the case, it dealt with scientific research, and it dealt with organ retention, and it in fact set landmark precedent throughout the state, so that now when you die in this state, the coroners are able to keep anything they want from your body, and they do not have to inform your loved ones. And that is a direct result of this case, of my case. And when I was finally able to speak to the doctor, Melanick, with regards to this case, she asked very specific questions. She informed me of this policy that was in effect at her office, where she had to obtain prior approval before she could do a deposition. She told me that she would speak with Dr. Hart and she would get back to me. She told me that Dr. Hart gave her preliminary approval to be my expert. I was very excited about that. Like I said, after having searched in vain for over a year for a doctor that would take a look at this case when they learned the facts, I feel that if this procedure were to stand in effect, where doctors such as Dr. Melanick, who sticks her neck out on the line for the search of truth, continues, there would be a chilling effect on litigants and the community alike that have actual grievances and actual concerns, what you would be developing as a police state. And it's also an unnecessarily chilling effect on the First Amendment. The doctor has the right to give their opinion, written and oral, and to say that they can't do that is a denial of due process, it's an abridgment of First Amendment rights, and you're, I think, asking for a lawsuit. I also wanted to add that when Dr. Melanick did take the case, after she gave her testimony, I remember she contacted me and she did let me know that she was called into Dr. Hart's office. She expressed grave concerns about her ability to continue on as my expert. I advised her that we had a contract, et cetera, et cetera. She was very concerned about her job. She told me that there was instances afterwards that she felt that she was being unnecessarily reprimanded, and it's just very unfortunate. When she told me about this hearing, I felt that it was I was compelled to come here today, and I hope that you take my comments under consideration. Thank you.
Good evening, David Pilpel. I don't know these employees or persons connected to the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner, but having heard the testimony, I support the city's position to retain the language in the SIA as is and urge you to take no action tonight. I think the most important part about the whole SIA process is to assess conflicts with employees and prescribe those that should not occur and set a process for those where they may occur through the advanced written determination, all for the purpose of providing the best and most ethical, but certainly the best public service to the city and county of San Francisco. It's not about providing outside service to others or to some extent to other counties. I'd also note, kind of to expand on what we heard about earlier, that as I understand, the circumstances have changed with regard to relationships with other counties. The city is a part of the Urban Area Security Initiative, or UAZI. There's a governing board where the city actually, through Ann Cronenberg, the current head of emergency management, chairs that body, and there's a city employee who's now the general manager of that body. They have relationships among the counties for mutual aid in the event of a disaster, but also on an ongoing basis. I think this is a very complicated area. Perhaps we're taking too much time, perhaps not enough time on this, but it sounds like there are other ancillary issues with regard to employees and relationships in that office, compensation, et cetera. I don't think those are all within the purview of this commission. So again, to reiterate, I would urge you to just leave the language as it is. And just finally, the 6-point written decision matrix that was referenced, it would be helpful if that were available for the public. I don't know if you've seen it, but I certainly would be interested in taking a look at that. Thanks.
Thank you. Commissioner Hand, did you have questions for Dr. Melanick?
Actually, I do.
And if any other commissioners have questions, we can address them now.
I guess the question I have is in terms of your viewpoint on this. Is it your expectation that you should be able to engage in any and all outside engagements that come your way without having to consult with the chief medical examiner?
It is not my opinion, and it was not the opinion of any of the employees, that we are at free, willy-nilly, can get involved in any case. We were willing, and the SIA that we recommended that you change the language to would eliminate the AWD process, because in the AWD process, you have to go through an advance written determination to get approval, and basically what's happening is that the content of the testimonial speech is being reviewed, as opposed to having a straight-up rule, which it sounds like the city commissioner would actually prefer, that defines you cannot get involved in cases where, for instance, the city and county of San Francisco is a party in the lawsuit, or the incident occurred within the jurisdiction of the city and county of San Francisco. As Dr. Azar alluded to, and I can testify to, when I got hired, those were the terms of our employment, that we could not testify against the interests of the city and county of San Francisco. So if, let's say, the city and county of San Francisco were being sued, we wouldn't testify in that. That would be a conflict. And we understood that. And the same thing for if the case was a San Francisco case. So in any situation where an incident occurred in San Mateo or Alameda, but the body was brought here, under California law, our jurisdiction begins when the death occurred. So if the death occurred at St. Francis from a burn that occurred in San Mateo, we would do the autopsy here, and we would not use that as the basis for a consulting case. We understood that. That was the terms of our employment. What happened was the SIA was initially given as draft language, and our unions, at least from what they've told me, were not informed of the specific language for the OCME. They were given the general language for GSA, but they either didn't receive the emails or it didn't compute. I don't know what happened there, but they were never given the specific language. The first time we were told of the SIA specific language was in an email from Olga Ryerson in March of 2009, and we never had to fill out the advance written determination forms until after the PECON case. So the PECON case, I testified.
So I think you've answered that question.
Yeah, I mean, we're willing to work with that, but we want it to be reasonable. You know, we don't want it to be just all cases in the Bay Area, but because that doesn't make sense. And just because we have property there or there's a mutual aid agreement, our testimony as sworn experts in Alameda, in San Mateo, in Marin in the past have never impacted those relationships.
Do you have any more?
Thank you.
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
One is, I wonder if you could tell us how many of these outside cases have you consulted on in the past year?
In a given year, I can't give you the exact number, but I can give you an estimate. I would say I take between 10 to 20 outside cases a year, but the amount of time varies tremendously depending on the case. Majority of the cases, it takes me an hour or 2 hours to review, and that's it. I never even hear from the attorneys again. Most of the time, I don't even have to write a report. So I stay well within the boundaries of the 20-hour a week maximum that I'm allowed under our
outside work. So my actual question is, yeah, how many cases do you estimate you've been permitted to consult on in the past year?
I estimate that last year was approximately 20. I'm not certain of that.
And my other question is, in your role as a deputy medical examiner, is that your position?
I'm an assistant medical examiner.
What responsibility do you have for managing relationships with other medical examiner offices in the nine Bay Area counties? Do you have any role in managing those relationships?
Well, I do interact with other coroner's offices occasionally if we need to get information about, but it's not direct, it's all indirect. It's all done through our investigators. So I don't have direct contact with those offices. Either our investigators do or our chief does. I can't think of a single case in the past 7 years where I've directly called a coroner or a medical examiner in adjacent county on a non-consult case, on a city of San Francisco case.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions.
Sure.
Dr. Melnick, your proposal to get rid of the AWD process, even if it were possible, would require a much more bright-line rule. I mean, I think you'd probably be facing some rule that said you couldn't consult with any cases in the nine Bay Area counties or something to that effect. Because otherwise, we're going to have to provide some discretion for the appropriate agency to make a determination on a case-by-case basis. I mean, is that something that you think would be better?
The thing is that we'd be welcome to discretion if the discretion were consistent and justified. The problem is that we've been told most recently that the Bay Area is not allowed, and yet there are three cases in the package I gave for you where in Alameda County and San Mateo County cases were allowed. So the decision of all or none, if there was just a better definition for the matrix of what defines a relationship or what defines a conflict of interest, I mean, I think it's not fair to say you can't testify in any case in Alameda County when I'm getting phone calls from the lawyers defending the police in Alameda in custody cases who want help, and they want it from a local pathologist because they, like all public agencies, they're strained too, and they don't want to be hiring people from far out of town to come in as experts to review their in-custody cases, and that's in defense of a police. So why that's not allowed, I don't understand that. I think it more, especially since the recommendation probably came from the Alameda County coroner in the first place, I don't see how declining that is good for the relationships between the counties. Okay. And the same thing for helping out Marin when their forensic pathologist's father dies. You know, we should be able to do those cases on our own time without interfering with the city resources or absorbing those into our existing workload. You know, if we're doing it on the weekend or after hours, it shouldn't affect the city. In fact, it would be less of an impact on the city.
Which was kind of the point of my question. If you're not responsible for managing the relationships, how is it that you know how the relationships should be managed?
Okay. Because I have, in the past, I've worked in Santa Clara County, and I was the lead or the chief forensic pathologist there for a year after the chief medical examiner was placed on administrative leave. So myself and two other pathologists ran that office for a full year. I also have contact, like I said, through my consult work with coroner's offices throughout the country, not just throughout California. So I do have a sense of what the standards are throughout the United States. And the examples that you've been given of Los Angeles and San Diego, those are actually the most restrictive of all. If you look at the surveys done by the National Association of Medical Examiners, the majority of forensic pathologists in the United States have no restrictions placed at all on their outside private practice except in their own jurisdiction and except for amount of time. So clearly they can't be having three full-time jobs. But the restrictions that exist in the majority of counties throughout the United States are on amount of time and on your own jurisdiction. Well, and the San Diego and Los Angeles models are actually on the extreme end.
You actually have raised the constitutional issue.
Yes.
Why is it that San Diego and Los Angeles counties are able to employ the policies that they have?
Number one, because those policies were employed with the consent of the employees, and they were part of the terms of employment when those people were hired. So when you take a job in Los Angeles, you know, I'm going to take this job at this salary, and I'm not going to have any outside consult work. Myself and the other assistants, when we were hired here, it was with the knowledge and expectation that we could do outside consult work in the Bay Area. In fact, we made financial commitments based on that, and that includes mortgages and college tuitions and all those things in living in a very expensive city. And now that the city is restricting our retirement income contribution is going up because of the high salary that we receive. I have four dependents. I have three children and a husband, so my health care contribution is going up. And then on top of that, the city is telling me I can't make up the difference by doing outside consult work, even if it's an hour or two on the weekend on my own time. The issue for the constitutional, which is what you asked, is I took the Pecan case when nobody else would, because this Hispanic woman who could not communicate well with the coroner, the relationships there had broken down entirely. They returned her son's heart to her, and she did not believe that it was her son's heart. And nobody else would look at this case. And I went to Dr. Hart, and I informed her of it, and I said, listen, I'm going to look at this heart and be able to give this woman closure so she could sleep at night, so she can know that the heart that was returned to her actually belongs to her son. And so I went up to UC and I met with a pathologist for the defense, and it was actually a very collegial environment where we both, the pathologist for the defense and me, the pathologist for the plaintiff, look at the heart and came to a consensus decision about the fact that it was the son's heart, the fact that it matched the autopsy report, and also the fact that the diagnosis was incorrect, that the cause of death was not what was written on the death certificate. So it wasn't this horrible, contentious thing. It was with agreement. I mean, me and the defense pathologist were agreeing with each other right there. And then after I testified in the case, I was told that I was testifying outside of the realm of my expertise and that I was interfering with relationships when that was never an issue. It was never my intention, and I was threatened with being held up on ethics violations to the point that I went to the attorney and said, I'm going to lose my job because of this. And she said, you have to testify because you're testifying in the public interest. Nobody else will talk about these issues, and nobody else is qualified to talk about organ retention issues other than other coroners and medical examiners. So here I was speaking out in the public interest, and then immediately afterwards, that's when we had to start filling up the AWD forms, and I start getting told that any public agency is not allowed, but then it got changed to any public agency in the Bay Area is not allowed, and then it became all of the Bay Area. The determination just keeps on shifting. And that's what we're complaining about, the fact that there is no written guideline, there is no good way to make a decent determination. And what that does is that opens up to retaliatory reactions. I mean, I spoke out in the public interest, and immediately after that, my consult work is restricted. It doesn't matter whether it's for money or pro bono, and I do quite a bit of pro bono work for the Innocence Project and for Parents of Murdered Children and a lot of other organizations. But that, even that speech, I have to get approved.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Melnick. Commissioners, comments?
What exactly is before us? Is it to change? Is it a proposal to change the policy to do away with it, or what exactly are we deciding?
No, you had heard one side of the story. Now you've heard both. So if you have determined that you want to move forward with changes, you would then direct the staff to craft a product. If you want to maintain the status quo, then that's what we'll do.
Thank you.
Is the 6-point decision matrix something that we have a role in putting together, or is that strictly within the?
That's the department.
That's just the department. Okay.
I have a question for staff. When there was discussion with the department, what were their proposals back and forth on the guidelines on the test, or what was the source of contention exactly?
Actually, when we started talking about the SIA, and in particular the SIA of GSA and the provision that applies to the medical examiner's office, once the commission adopted a template, we went back to the GSA and they came up with the language that basically modified a prior submission to the Ethics Commission. When the commission actually formally considered the language, it was exactly the same language that now exists in the SIA. So that language has been through meet and confer sessions, at least two hearings at the Ethics Commission before it was finally approved.
Oh, I think, I'm sorry, I meant more recently, since April, when, were there discussions since?
Yeah, there were informal discussions,
yes,
between us and the GSA,
yes,
meetings with us and city attorney's office, acting city administrator Amy Brown. Dr. Hart was part of those discussions as well. We did not consider other language. We were considering whether or not we should keep the language that now exists in the SIA or whether we should change that language. In looking to see whether we should keep that language or change the language, we also looked to see other jurisdictions in California to see what they did, the types of language that they may have. And that's how we learned that there are basically four jurisdictions that have medical examiners as employees. And two of those jurisdictions, San Diego and Los Angeles, have restrictions on the outside practice of giving expert testimony.
Thank you.
So you said there were four. Two of them are Los Angeles and San Diego. One of them is us. What's the fourth?
No, I'm sorry. Four others.
Oh, four
one
others.
One is Ventura County, which has no restrictions, and the other one is Santa Clara County, which has time restrictions, and you cannot testify if it is about a case involving Santa Clara.
You know, to me, the biggest problem is the difficulty is the vagueness of the matrix, and it seems to me that if I certainly understand that the GSA, that the departments need discretion to make decisions that are for the best interest of the county. However, I believe that the policies and the criteria need to be clear enough such that employees have confidence that it's being executed in a objective manner, and it's good for both sides, because then the department heads can point to objective criteria as well that they can point to show that it's not a subjective issue, that there are legitimate issues that are being considered and for which decisions are decided upon. What I don't know is what the Ethics Commission can do about that.
There's no authority behind it, but you can recommend to the department that they review the existing process and implement some more clearly defined process for this particular area of disagreement. If nothing else, I don't know what their six points are, but that process itself, it may be clearer than we know, because we don't know what those six elements are.
I actually have a copy. It was from a
I think it was in a prior meeting we got them, but
they are vague.
Okay. Yeah, I recall.
Well, that might be your first act, is to recommend that the department refine that, and at some point in the future, see if it's working.
It wasn't just the department that came up with these SIAs. We were a part of that.
Right.
And so it's not just on the department. Seems to me in this instance, it's a question of, I don't believe that Dr. Melnick wants to be restricted in any way with regard to the work that she's permitted to do. And it also seems to me that she's not going to be satisfied until this SIA business goes away from her department. It seems reasonable to me for people who are leading the department and have to manage relationships with other departments in the nine Bay Area counties, notwithstanding the fact that nothing, I mean, we've asked the city administrator, well, has anything happened? Nothing has happened because they've got a policy that prevents what they're afraid of happening in terms of the breach in the relationships they have with these other counties. They have a policy in place that to this point has avoided that. It seems to me that an employer has the right to place reasonable conditions on what an employee can do. Dr. Melnick has indicated that she's been approved this year or in the past year in at least 20 instances. So when they're approving some that are outside of the nine Bay Area counties, this rationale that they give for the policy rings true to me, that they're trying to preserve the relationships with these other counties. If it were not so, if they were targeting Dr. Melnick, they wouldn't approve any of the 20 that they seem to have approved. So it all seems very reasonable and rational to me. I just think that Dr. Melnick is not going to be satisfied with anything less than, you know, the complete freedom to do as she pleases.
Commissioner Hahn?
I would say, however, that while I don't disagree with the bulk of what you just said, Commissioner Ward, I do think that we've heard Ms. Brown and others talk about the importance of these relationships that we have with other Bay Area counties, and I certainly think that's important. However, I think internally within within the medical examiner's office, I do think that the criteria does need to be we should recommend that it be clarified and more and better defined so that there isn't an appearance of either personal retaliation or favoritism or inconsistency, because clearly it sounds as if there are personnel issues within that department based on this. I don't think that the SIA or the advanced written directive are in themselves problematic. I think that that's a good thing, but I think that it has to be executed in a way that is that it appears fair and, in fact, is fair and reasonable to all of the people to whom it applies. And that apparently the feeling it does not seem to be that. So some improvement has to be made on how these decisions are being made.
So I heard a chorus of that I was mistaken about what Dr. Melnick has said she'd be satisfied with in terms of a policy. So yes. I'd like to be stand corrected. If Dr. Melnick would once again explain to us the policy that she proposes for
I should state that initially we proposed that it would be the terms of our employment, which is that we should, just like in Santa Clara, that we cannot testify in cases where the city and county of San Francisco is a defendant in the lawsuit or where they took jurisdiction of the case, so the incident or death occurred in San Francisco. However, in subsequent discussions with Dr. Hart, we were willing to negotiate. We've actually had some substantive discussions about changing that wording so that it wouldn't be where a public entity in the Bay Area counties is a defendant in the lawsuit. That would, for example, rule out cases such as Pecan v. San Mateo, where somebody is suing San Mateo, the county, directly. But it would not rule out where an incident occurred in San Mateo and a guy fell and he died, and then, you know, person A is suing person B because of the crack in the sidewalk that made him fall. That civil litigation case where someone fell, the county's not getting sued. The sidewalk was privately owned. It's just a civil case. And my testimony about the fact that he had a broken hip doesn't affect relationship, has never affected relationships in the past.
Is that an actual example of a case?
No, I made that up, but I can give you another example. Chan v. Coles, which was approved just a month ago. That was a case.
Okay, if it was approved, I don't hear about it.
No, I wanted to give it as an example because it is an Alameda County case, so it's an adjacent county. And it was a civil case where a private entity was suing another private entity. Public entity was not a party in the lawsuit. And that was approved. But then a month later, another similar civil case, private versus private, was not approved.
Dr. Melanick, I think Commissioner Ward's question, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, was that if you're saying that you're willing, that you're proposing something broader than what you originally proposed, what is it that you are proposing?
Oh, then another proposal that we would be amenable to was no officer or employee of the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner of San Francisco can testify in a case where the incident or injury occurred within the city and county of San Francisco or falls under the jurisdiction of the city and county of San Francisco Medical Examiner's Office, or where the city and county of San Francisco is a party in the lawsuit, or where an adjacent Greater Bay Area county, and you can define the nine counties, is a named defendant in the lawsuit.
So is it your view that there couldn't be a situation where your testimony or an AME's testimony could interfere with a relationship with a county, even if the county was not named as a proper defendant?
If the county is not named as a proper defendant in the lawsuit and it's just civil litigation, I don't see, and we're restricting it just to the Greater Bay Area where we have those relationships, I don't see how it would impact. Like I said, it's never impacted in the past before, even before the rules were set in place. By the way, with all due respect, Commissioner Ward, the restriction only started in 2008. I've been employed with the city and county of San Francisco since 2004. And Dr. Stevens, the previous chief medical examiner, did consult work for years before that. And to my knowledge, there was never any interference with relationships with the county during that time.
Have any policies with regard to the terms of your employment changed since 2004 to 2011 besides this SIA? Have you been required to do things differently in the 7 years that you've been there than when you started?
That's a tough question. Let me think. Not anything of any palpable significance. I mean, minor modifications like death certificates, they don't like to put us and there anymore. We're supposed to use with. I mean, not anything of any real significance to this degree. This is really the only major change, I mean, in the sense that it affects our employment practices and our financial well-being.
So I guess my last question for you would be, what happens if you or some other assistant medical examiner testifies in a situation in one of the other nine Bay Area counties, and it does cause tension between the two counties? Then what?
I have to further the question, though. If that, are you saying that hypothetical with the case that we've changed the SIA, or we haven't? It's the same as it is now.
Well,
in your hypothetical,
you've been permitted to testify.
Okay.
So and you're testifying in a case. Well, I don't know what the fact pattern is, but it turns out that it makes the county in which you've testified unhappy, and unhappy with the San Francisco Medical Examiner's Office. So let's assume that that's what happens.
Okay.
Then what?
Okay.
And I'm speaking with her. I'm speaking with her. Right. If you want to come to the mic afterwards, you're welcome to. But please,
right.
This has been going on the entire time, and when you testified, this lady and Ms. Hart, they never said a word. But the entire time that, so please, not with me.
I guess I can't really answer your hypothetical because it depends on what the case would be and what the strain in the relationships would be. Personally, I find what happened in the Pecan case very disturbing. I was already approved to work on that case. I had informed Dr. Hart of my involvement in the case before the AWD process even began. And I was named as a retained expert, and I found today that for certain that there was interference in my testimony after I was already testifying to intimidate me as a witness. I believe that there are laws that bar that and that it is illegal to interfere with the testimony of an expert witness, just as you wouldn't want for legal reasons to interfere with the testimony of a non-expert witness. So to that, I had suspected that that was the case, but to find that out with certainty today is very disturbing to me. That said, thinking with hindsight on the Pecan case where it happened, if I had been approached about how it was causing tension between the counties, I would hope that we would have been able to resolve it professionally by reviewing my testimony with the chief medical examiner, showing her and reassuring her that it would not have had any impact on the county, which it didn't. Also, with regards to the Supreme Court decision, the court decision upheld the right of coroners and medical examiners to retain organs and tissues, and none of my written opinion was overturned or impeached. They took it for what it was worth, and as Commissioner Herr pointed out, it didn't impact my credibility here. It's never come up in any of my testimony here, and it hasn't had any repercussions. So I think that there are professional constructs and ways of dealing with tensions between counties on a professional level without necessarily imposing outside rigorous rules that are then broadly applied and irregularly applied where there's a component of retaliation or retribution. I should say, by the way, that I suspect that one of the reasons I'm the only one who has been turned down is because I'm the only one who submits these forms. If you create a rule that people don't agree with and that they're not involved in the process and their unions may or may not have been notified, sometimes people just bypass the rules. And, as long as they don't get caught, I guess that's what happens. I feel in many ways that I'm getting punished for being forthright and being honest and being upfront about my work from the beginning, even before this policy was applied.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think we have any further questions for you, Dr. Melanick. I agree with what Commissioner Hahn said. I think that, and so in many respects, that echoes what Commissioner Ward said. I don't think that doing away with the SIA or changing 3B3 is necessarily the way to go here. But if three of the four or five AMEs believe that there is a retaliatory aspect to how it's being implemented, I do think that suggests a problem with the matrix that in my prior review of it I do recall it being pretty vague, and I think that I would agree with Commissioner Hahn that we should recommend to Ms. Brown that they work on clarifying that so that for the good of the department and for the good of the SIA and making sure that it meets the purpose that it was created for.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely don't, so I didn't hear any justification for doing away with the AWD or SIA, so I definitely agree with that. I'd be fine. I'd agree with trying to provide some guidance on the 6-point matrix, and it seems that the sticking point is the interference, whether it would interfere with a relationship, and how do you make that determination? So maybe if there was some guidance we could give on if it's going to be a geographic, you know, if that is the objective criteria, and if there are exceptions being applied to the geographic limitation, then what are those exceptions? And I hope perhaps it's as simple as that, making it clear what the objective criteria are, whatever they may be, and making it known why, if there was a limitation, a geographic limitation, why there were exceptions made to that. But, you know, hard to say without knowing exactly what happened there and if that's even the case.
Ms. Brown, would you mind coming back to the podium? Is that something that, you know, obviously we as the commission can't make you do that. We obviously have an interest in seeing that the SIA and AWD process work well, and the decision matrix that you use to apply it obviously impacts that. So we have an interest in it working well, as do you. Is this something that you could work on with the department to develop a criteria that is perhaps clearer and that provides employees with better understanding of how these decisions are being evaluated?
Well, certainly, Commissioner, that was our intent in putting the matrix together.
Sure.
And again, I do want to say that we didn't do this in a vacuum. We did have a lot of assistance from the city attorney's office and also from HR. So that was our intent. We were actually trying to set forth a framework because there was this professed confusion about how the requests for advance written determination were being determined. So we thought, okay, you know, let's define a framework and make sure that everyone has it so that there will be a clear understanding. I actually think if I had specific cases and could walk through them using the matrix with you tonight, I think that it's less vague than it sounds. Just looking at it on paper, it actually, in my humble opinion, has worked rather well for the last few months since we've gotten it out to everybody.
So why is it,
I think that there are civil cases, for example, in another county where, yes, they've been approved because they're civil cases. There's not a public entity. It's not that any case in Alameda County is not okay. It's that there's, which question is it? Question five. The professional relationship with a public entity. So Dr. Melanick brought up a case, Chan v. Kohl's department store. It's the location, the events that occurred that led to that lawsuit were in Alameda County, but there's no government entity named as a defendant, so it was approved, as the matrix would lead anyone to determine. Now, having said that, you're absolutely right. Our interest is in trying to make sure this works. I don't think it's as simple as saying the nine Bay Area counties that are part of UWASI. I mean, I certainly think if we need to spell that out explicitly and just say if they're a party, you can't testify, we can certainly do that, and I'm delighted to hear that might be acceptable. But it's not going to be as simple as just those nine counties. I mentioned, and I'm not going to be able to remember if it's I can't remember the name of the county, but there's a county in Northern California where any suspicious child death gets investigated here. So they're not part of the UWASI, and yet there is that relationship that I think would lead us to be very wary of approving a request to have one of our employees testify against that county. So, you know, I think if we're going to have to spell out every instance, it may be a little difficult, but I'm certainly willing to roll up my sleeves with staff and the city attorney's office and HR and try to do that.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything for Ms. Brown?
And maybe not spell out every instance, but give some examples. Maybe that would help, if that would provide some clarity. I don't know. It's not that the factors are fine, and I actually do have it in front of me because I pulled it out from a prior meeting. But it just sounds like it's the application of one particular factor number 5, interference with a professional relationship with another county that seems to be the bone of contention. And so maybe if there was some way to clarify the application of that, not so much change, it's not perhaps changing your 6-point matrix, it's probably fine. It's just the way in which it's applied to make sure that it's being applied with objective criteria.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I think actually the clarification that you're trying to provide really does a great job of illustrating the problem that we've had here. Because, you know, on the one hand, you'd love to have a bright line and just say, you know, here's what you can or can't do. On the other hand, we're dealing with very fact-specific situations with relationships, with people, with, you know, lots of issues that don't always lend themselves well to bright lines. And frankly, mm-hmm. I'm not at all convinced that bright lines are going to make anybody any happier. I do actually think that the application has worked rather well. And I will go back to the fact that more requests are being approved than are being denied that are being submitted by Dr. Melnick. So I don't think it's being applied in some arbitrary way. I think if I had the specifics, and I have done this in my own office, and walked through the specifics of the cases that are being submitted for approval with the matrix, again, I think it's working quite well. But having said that...
You know, Ms. Brown, you said that several times, and I appreciate that. And again, we understand you need discretion. But 3 of your, I believe 4 AMEs have signed a rather... the adjective to describe this letter escapes me in as far as how it reflects on how well that policy is being applied. And maybe I'm not saying that everything in this letter is correct. Certainly not.
I'm not
suggesting that. But it clearly indicates to me that there is some problem, at least in terms of perception, of how this is being applied within for the AMEs. So while I appreciate that you think it's being applied well, I think that the contrary view is worth consideration.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion on this? Are we even in agreement as far as the commissioners go for our recommendation to the department and to Ms. Brown?
I think we've already joined on. Know that you need to do anything.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you to all who participated. We appreciate you being here, and I think we provided you with plenty of opportunity to speak, and we, I think, benefited from hearing from all of you. So thank you very much. Thanks, Ms. Brown. The next item on the agenda is consideration of requests for waivers from the post-employment bans. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to introduce this?
Yes, you have a memo that stipulates the details about Attorney Thomas Long's waiver requests. Is actually a dual request, although it involves a single position, and I believe he's here to present his case and answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Long.
Thank you for waiting.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Thomas Long. I'm a former deputy city attorney with the Energy and Telecommunications team of the city attorney's office. And as of last Tuesday, I am now legal director for a consumer advocacy organization known as the Utility Reform Network, or TURN. TURN's mission is to advocate on behalf of the interests of residential and small business consumers, primarily before the California Public Utilities Commission, in support of affordable rates, reasonable policies, sustainable energy policies, and other issues of that nature. As has been noted, I have made requests for waiver from two provisions of Section 3.234 of the Campaign and Government Code. I request a waiver of subsection A1 and subsection A2. I have reviewed the memo that was prepared in response to my letter. I agree that it accurately summarizes my request. I further agree with the proposed limitation with respect to my subsection A2 waiver request. That is, I would accept the limitation that my communications with the city attorney's office be limited to communications solely on behalf of TURN. And with that, I would make myself available for any questions you may have.
Do any of the commissioners have questions for Mr. Long? Commissioner Liu?
Mr. Long, the on page 2 of your letter, you've listed in the middle paragraph several proceedings. You start with the paragraph, the most significant ongoing matters in which I represented the city, and you list these matters. Are these the particular matters that you're seeking a waiver for, or are you asking for kind of a broad waiver? Because I mean, at first I was just initially concerned about the rules of professional conduct and so on and so forth, and then, I was less concerned once I saw that the city attorney's office supports your request, but then at the same time I was wondering, have they given their consent and agreed to a waiver of conflict, and maybe that should come first so that we know which matters we're granting a waiver for.
With respect to subsection A1, and that's the ban on representing another entity on a matter in which I've represented the city, the entire universe of matters on which I'm seeking a waiver are listed in that paragraph, so there would not be any others. And as you know, and as the memo makes clear, the waiver I'm seeking from you tonight is the first gate I must pass through before I'm able to work on any of those matters for TURN. The second gate would be requesting from the city attorney's office directly a waiver under the rules of professional conduct. So if you granted me the waiver tonight, I would still have to go through the second gate for each of those matters. It's not clear to me that I will be asking for that waiver from the city attorney's office for each of those matters, but you would give me the opportunity to do that if you granted me the waiver I request tonight.
Okay, so then I do have a follow-up question, and I don't know that, well, maybe we do. I don't know that we have to go through each one, but it was a little bit unclear to me. Say, for instance, we take the first matter you're talking about, CPUC proceedings arising out of the explosion of the PG&E San Bruno gas pipeline. So what was the city's role in this proceeding, and what was TURN's role? I mean, what...
Okay, I first need to caveat this by stating that I was somewhat involved in the city's participation in those two proceedings prior to my departure from city service. But I just want to be clear that I may not entirely accurately summarize all of the city's participation, because my involvement generally involved reviewing some pleadings or portions of pleadings, writing a paragraph here and there, and I erred on the side of being conservative. One could even argue that I wasn't all that significantly involved in them. But with that stated, the city has been, those two proceedings relate to enforcement actions that might be appropriate to take against PG&E. For example, whether there should be penalties against PG&E for its conduct in connection with maintaining its pipelines, and also what practices need to be taken going forward, including how much should ratepayers have to pay in order to improve the system to prevent such explosions from happening again in the future. And both of those matters, of course, you can see are matters that ratepayers and consumers generally have a significant interest in, and of course the city has a significant interest, because we want to make sure that there's no such unsafe situation that lying beneath the streets and byways of San Francisco and creates a hazard for citizens and businesses here in the city.
And so you're saying, and then what is TURN's role?
TURN's role has very similar interests. TURN may have more of a focus, somewhat more of a focus on rate issues, but they're extremely concerned about safety as well, and making sure that PG&E is engaging in practices that make sure that our pipelines are, transmission pipelines are safe.
Okay. So in all of these instances, the city has like an enforcement role, and TURN also has a quasi-enforcement interest.
The city's role, it may differ from proceeding to proceeding, but basically the city is looking out for the interests of its citizens and businesses, and also looking out for the interests of its energy operations that are handled by the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Long? Thank you, Mr. Long.
Thank you.
Commissioners, any comments or thoughts on this matter?
Well, I had been concerned until I saw that the city attorney's office is actually supportive of this. And if the city attorney's office is supportive of it and will waive the conflict under the professional rules of conduct, I certainly have no problem with that.
And I feel similarly, in addition to the fact that we just grant a preliminary, sort of, and that the city attorney grants the final waiver on a case-by-case basis, so.
I would recommend that we grant, that we go along with the staff recommendation of granting the waiver.
I agree with all of you. Is there public comment on this matter?
David Pilpel, I wanted to speak in support of this proposed waiver. By way of background, most of the waivers that have been granted under the CNGC code have actually been to deputy city attorneys in various capacities. This is the first one that was going to a public interest agency. Most have gone to private practice or other sorts of employment situations. I'd also note that there is a different former deputy city attorney who actually joined the city attorney's office from TURN. So this is an example of someone going to TURN, even though someone had a prior life had come from TURN. And I agree with the staff analysis that there's a mutuality of interest. TURN certainly represents ratepayer interests in the public generally, and I think the city's involvement in rate proceedings before the CPUC has been for similar types of things. I'll skip my speech about charging for considering granting waivers. Staff has heard that many times. But on the very narrow issue of granting this waiver, I support the motion before you. Thanks.
Thank you.
And I had prior involvement with Mr. Long on a very narrow matter, and he was very helpful. Good guy. Thanks.
Is there a motion?
I move that we grant the waiver.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Motion passes. The next item on the agenda is consideration of possible amendment to Ethics Commission enforcement regulations. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to?
This is one of the things that came out of our discussions of the recommendation of the civil grand jury report. And at the last meeting, Commissioner Ward had stated that he would be in favor of this change, so that only a single commissioner needs to calendar a complaint for discussion. Other commissioners seem to be of like mind, so we prepared this regulation change according to those wishes.
Thank you. Commissioners, any comments on the proposed changes?
No, I'm in favor of it for the reasons previously discussed.
Me too. I have one minor suggested change. I think we can delete the word one in both A and C.
Any member.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I like it. Public comment on this matter?
Hal Smith. Thank you, Deputy Executive Director Ng. You did a fine job writing that. It's simple. It's easy. It's nice. It's fluid. We appreciate you following through one of our recommendations from the civil grand jury. Thank you.
David Pilpel, I have no issue with the proposed change. It's fine. It did, though, suggest in my mind, and I discussed with staff prior to the meeting, this issue about stipulated agreements. If they're not calendared before the commission and just entered into, they may or may not appear on the website, and it's not clear to me how the public would learn that these have occurred. So what I've suggested to staff is if there's a way to report on such stipulated agreements in the ED's report or some other vehicle by which they can be made known. I'm not sure great publicity is warranted, but just so that it's not like a state secret if it is not calendared for discussion. And I understand that staff is considering ways to respond to that. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Referrals from the Sunshine Ordinance Task Force were dismissed under this former procedure. I say former because I think the change is important. Although, according to what Commissioner Hansen told me, she had requested in almost every case that the matter be heard before the full commission. For those of you who don't know me, I was I filed a lawsuit 2 years ago to look at the records in those 14 cases to determine why they were dismissed. And among other things I found were that the reports from the executive director's staff were biased. I saw all the reports, were biased, probably way too short, and often misstated the facts. Why am I bringing this to your attention? I'm bringing it to your attention because the way the regs were written, the commissioners had only 5 days from the receipt of the report to ask that it get calendared. I looked at 14 files provided by Mr. St. Croix and the city attorney's office, and I could not find the date on which any of those reports were furnished to the commissioners, nor did I ever find any of Ms. Hansen's requests that they be calendared. So what I'm driving at, and I sound like a broken record, is you've got to pay attention to how these cases come into your office, how they get processed, and how they get to you. And the best way to do that is to look at those regulations that are being proposed, because the existing regulations under which Senator St. Croix has been operating are inapplicable to open government cases. Thank you.
Is there a motion?
I move that we adopt the change with the amendment that's been proposed by Chairman Herr.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. The next item on the agenda is consideration of the annual report for fiscal year 2010 and 2011. Mr. St. Croix, would you like to introduce this matter?
Well, I think it speaks for itself. It's a bit shorter than in past years, reflecting the fact that we've had additional staff turnover, a very busy year with the mayor's race, and so on. But be glad to listen to any suggestions, concerns, or changes or additions that the commissioners have.
Any comments from the commissioners?
Let me bring up a touchy subject. And that's the civil grand jury report. Does it, would that have been included in this year? Was the report issued in this year? I don't think our response was prepared with.
I believe the report came out at the end of June, so yes.
So as unflattering as it was, but also from my standpoint, inaccurate. But we also, I mean, we responded to it. And I mean, I think perhaps it should be included. It's a pretty major event. The civil grand jury of the city and county of San Francisco did a report on their view of the Ethics Commission. And, you know, it's part of the public record, but also our response is too. So perhaps in the next report or, you know, in amending this report, the response is outside of the the year. So I don't know. I just bring it up. It's a
let me make a suggestion.
Yes.
I would be loath to describe or try to précis or in some way recast the civil grand jury report in my own words. So we could add a section that this report was issued and make it an appendix so that people can have access to the report directly through this and include our response, even though that was made outside of the calendar year. And that would make sure that we acknowledged the report and our response to it.
I would be in favor of that. I'd rather do that than be bombarded with, you know, accusations that we deliberately, you know, avoided the inclusion as part of the annual report. But I do think it's important that our response is included.
We'll do that.
I do too. Yeah,
I agree with that.
Agree.
Okay. I had a question, a minor question. You mentioned that. Our website has experienced a 10% increase in hits. Do we have the actual number?
Yes. I'm sure we do.
Okay.
But we would know what it was.
Okay, but because, I mean, if it's a significant number of visits to the website, I mean, I think the number itself would be worthy of being included.
We can do that.
Yeah, and to show, and if you have the numbers, you know, from last year and then show the increase, I think that that would be a good thing to include.
Okay. Done.
Question. Any other suggestions or comments from the commissioners?
Well, while we're on the communication aspect, you have here to, you know, used a variety of ways to disseminate information, including Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, iTunes. Could we have more specificity? How and when did we use Twitter, and what are we doing with Facebook? I'm not asking for an extensive explanation, but if you could just briefly describe how we're using YouTube or iTunes or any of these, I think would be helpful. Maybe just some bullets. Do we actually have somebody who's doing Twitter feeds?
Yeah, we have a tech person.
Is that you?
Heavens, no. No, we have someone responsible for all of our electronic communication.
And do we have a lot of followers on Twitter?
No.
Okay, well. No, okay.
But it's there.
All right, well, I think it would be helpful
to have some specific bullet points on each of those.
I had a couple very minor points. On page 5, the bottom, where it's the last sentence, only 3 commissioners have not filed their annual SEIs this year. So that refers to, I mean, more than just commissioners file these.
Correct.
Can we change that to individuals?
Sure.
It's going to be clearer that way. And my other change is on page 8. Last sentence.
Is that accurate? Is it accurate that only 3 of the people who are supposed to file these things haven't filed? Or is it that 3 commissioners have not filed?
We'll make, if it is commissioners,
leave it.
Should we leave it?
Leave
okay.
It. Yeah, if it is 3 commissioners, then leave it. But if it's not, then that's a good okay. Point. Sorry, the other change was at the bottom of page 8. I think eternal should be ongoing. Just wordsmithing.
Under which number? I'm sorry.
Page 8, number 4.
Right at the very bottom.
Right at the last, the second to last one. Okay. Missing?
I just found one typo, which is on the bottom of page 9. Beverly Hayon's term should go to 2/2012.
To where? I'm sorry.
It says to 2/10/12. It should be 2012.
2012.
Your time has long passed, apparently.
Yeah, apparently so.
That's where the eternal came from.
Public comment?
Hello, commissioners. I just have 2 points. I think if you're talking about SEIs that have not been filed during this period of time ending in June 30th, that there are more than 3. I think that's most closely to 10 who didn't file by that time. It may be 3 now, but there were a number of people who didn't file until August, according to what's on the web page. So you might want to take a look at that. Also, in October of 2010, the commissioner took up and passed on a 4-1 vote a number of recommendations for changing the campaign finance laws, including a recommendation that contractors at state agencies, such as redevelopment, be allowed to contribute to office holders who make decisions. Based on a belief by the commission that office holders, such as the mayor and the board, are unaware of who the contractors are at redevelopment and other state agencies. It also recommended that there not be any further reporting requirements for nonprofits who are city contractors. Those have, I understand, have not been acted on by the board, but I think it's important to note that this was an action that was taken by the commission on a sensitive issue and remains to be acted on. Thank you.
Thank you.
David Pelpel, a number of minor points. Starting on page 5, the question about commissioners. It may well be that they were members of, say, the Board of Examiners or something who are not normally referred to as commissioners, so maybe individuals does make more sense. Moving on page 6 under investigations and enforcement, I would add something about not just the number of cases resolved, but the number of cases filed or that were within the jurisdiction of the commission. And perhaps some other language about, again, number of stipulated settlements or any result from investigations and enforcement. It doesn't give a really good sense of what actually came out at the end there. Moving on page 7, advice and opinions, the second paragraph refers to the 3 informal advice letters. I would add a sentence that says essentially these advice letters and the response are available on the website, assuming that they are, in case anyone is interested. And actually, with respect to the civil grand jury, if you do choose to include reference to it, I would make reference. I would not attach it to the report. I think it stands on its own, and I think the commission's response stands on its own. I would reference those things and say the civil grand jury's report was issued, and a link is and it is available, or it's linked on the website, and the commission's response is similarly available and linked on the website. I would not attach it to this report. I think this report stands on its own. I think I had one other bit here. On the bottom of page 9, I believe Commissioner Hansen's term actually ended in February of 2011. I think they all end in February, although she may have had another 60 days under the holdover provision. They do end in February, and I don't know when she filed the leaving off. All right. I stand corrected. Thank you. Other than that, I think it's a pretty thorough report, and I once again commend the commission on having such a thorough report. It would be nice if others outside this room actually read this. Thank you.
Two suggestions that I think we should consider briefly. The link to the civil grand jury report, I kind of like that idea. Mm-hmm. Okay with that. And including some mention of the proposed CFRO amendments.
They were adopted by the commission at that time, but they're not going to be enacted.
They're not going to be enacted. The board has, well, you mean, can you explain that further?
Yeah, we sent them over to the board. There are no members of the board that are at this point willing to take them up and sponsor them.
Ah, okay. Then I probably would not recommend adding that, unless other commissioners feel strongly.
I don't have a problem with it, with them being added. In fact, I don't have a problem with anything that we do being included in the reports that we make. So, I mean, it seems like, the reason that it's being asked is that it was something that, a certain segment of the people who follow Ethics Commission activities think was the wrong thing to do, and everybody is entitled to their opinion. That's why it's being asked to be included. It's something that we did. I don't mind it being included, and I'll state on the record that I don't mind it being included. If the other commissioners don't feel that way, that's fine, but I won't run away from the things that we do.
Well, it is work that was done by the staff. What happens now since they're not going to be enacted?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
The status quo.
It's nothing happens right. At all. So we revert to the act, to the original regulations.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem, per se, with adding that. I mean, I do think that this document should summarize sort of the important aspects, and I agree. I see no problem with it.
Yeah, I have no problem with that as well.
Okay, is there a motion to, do we need to move?
Sure.
Adopt the draft annual report subject to the amendments that we've discussed?
I move that we adopt the annual report with the changes that have been indicated.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Next item on the agenda is minutes of the commission's regular meeting of August 8th. Any proposed amendments? You okay? Second amendment apparently has one.
Well, I just a couple errors that were noted. Misspelling of a name on page 5, Mr. Hennigan, and the two written statements need to be switched in order. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? I think on page 6, the motion should be revised slightly because I think it was a sort of pretty complicated issue, and I think it should read, moved, seconded, and passed 5-0 that Mayor Ed Lee was not a candidate by virtue of being the sitting mayor at the time Progress for All was formed. Because I think we were pretty explicit on the limited bases for our motion. Does that make sense? Missing, is that or accurate, or city attorney, do you have any? Okay. Any other changes? Public comment?
David Pilpel, I don't actually know the spelling of Kevin Hennigan. If it was incorrect on page 5, then it should probably be corrected on page 1 as well. And I would note on the bottom of page 5, Shelley Bradford Bell was actually misspelled. It is correct, and on page 1 it's Bradford-Bell. Otherwise, I think... and I do appreciate on page 6... capturing the attendance in closed session as required under the Sunshine Ordinance. Good work. Thank you.
Alan Grossman again. The first thing is I'd like to request that the draft minutes be posted to the website. I didn't realize until this morning that the commission didn't do that because most other organizations do, and so I had to hurry up and ask for a copy, which Catherine provided me quite promptly. I have one or two additional thoughts. I want to pick up, though, on Mr. Ward's question to me at the end of what I thought was the end of the meeting. Last meeting about whether Mr. St. Croix's performance evaluation by the commission should be public rather than closed session. At that time, I said I thought I'd like to know the criteria that are used to evaluate his performance. As it turned out, I don't know the criteria, and I don't know what happened. I don't even know if the performance review is memorialized in some written way. But it's pretty clear to me that at least in the case of this organization and the difficulties with the public's perception, or some of us, our perception of the way the staff is administered, that it would have been very valuable to have had that evaluation done in public rather than in closed session. And the main reason is that without doing it in public, you don't get what I'm doing right now, which is public comment. I have probably as much experience with Mr. St. Croix's and his staff's work product as anybody other than the commissioners, and in one or two cases probably more because the commissioners have been recently appointed. So I really believe, at least in this case, it would be appropriate. And quite honestly, there's nothing in a performance evaluation that is subject to the privacy rules, because the privacy rules only encompass very personal matters. And in the course of doing an evaluation, it's unlikely that you're going to ask for Mr. St. Croix or any employee's unlisted telephone number. So I will respond to Mr. Ward's question again and say, yes, I definitely believe in the case of the directors of whether it be planning, public works, or this group, or some other city department, that it would be helpful to the public to have that done openly and so that you can receive public comment.
Thank you, Mr. Grossman.
Just excuse me, just two name changes. The bottom of page two, it's Hal, H-A-L Smith, not Sal. And at the top of page three, the spelling of Brian Clement, it's B-R-I-A-N, Brian Clement, K-L-I-M-E-N-T. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
I'm sorry, I found one other thing. On page seven, those two motions should be renumbered. There was already a motion four on the bottom of page six. So they'd become five and six rather than four and five. Thanks.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes as amended?
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. The next item on the agenda is the Executive Director's Report. I'm Mr. St. Croix.
two things that I'll highlight. One, item number one, televised meetings. Also something in follow-up to the grand jury report recommendation. All the information I have is essentially there. I did get a budget from SGTV. Again, it's not in the budget, but it's of a size that I could probably excise the funds from somewhere else. We'd need approval from various other departments, the mayor's budget office, and so on, but hopefully that would be a formality. The bigger problem is scheduling. This room is not wired for televisation. The other two rooms that are available, one of them is already televised, so that slot is taken. The other one also wants to be televised. So they're not willing to switch rooms with us permanently because it diminishes their own desires. So I'm told that this room will be renovated to accommodate televisation in the foreseeable future, but the date is uncertain. So it maybe we have to wait until then. That's all the work I've done on this to date. I will look to see when there are rooms available on alternate days of the week where we could have the same meeting time every day. Obviously, because of your time commitments, they will have to be evening meetings, unless you feel strongly otherwise. So I will do some more work on this and report back to you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And someone did mention tonight about the Sunshine. We did get the comments and recommendations from the Sunshine Task Force on our proposed regulations in August. Catherine and Garrett, especially Catherine, has already done quite a bit of work on analyzing those. And they will be back to the commission in the foreseeable future. I can't say that it will be in October or not, but we're looking at getting them to you.
And for the record, how long have we been waiting for those recommendations from the Sunshine Ordinance?
They got them last August. We got the return this August.
Mr. Grossman is gone, though. So. We've been waiting for a while.
Okay. We do think in October we may get to the next round of proposed CFRO changes. We sent them all to you in advance because it's a lot of reading. you have homework to do at some point. But that's it for highlights.
Thank you, Mr. St. Croix. Items for future meetings? Public comment. Director's report. Mr. Pilpel, my apologies.
Thanks. David Pilpel. As to the televised meetings, I want to be very clear. I do not support televised meetings. I think it is unnecessary, unwarranted, a waste of funds that would take away from staff and other priorities. If there is a need to have a special televised hearing when there's a probable cause hearing or some other matter of importance, I can see doing that on occasion on a regular basis for the kind of meetings that we normally have. I don't think it's warranted, and I think it's excessive. I would encourage you to not pursue televising meetings, plus the reason that you'd have to move the meeting date to some other night that's less convenient and non-traditional for this body. I hope I've been clear about that. With regard to item four, the campaign finance disclosure program, and references five committees that are delinquent. I'm wondering what those committees are by name. And again, I would ask that in the future, such delinquent bodies be so named in the report. And on page three, item six, I want to thank you very much for including the summary of the ballot measure Prop F in the ED's report, perhaps in response to prior comments that I made. Thank you.
Sorry to take your time once more, but I could not disagree more vehemently. I think televising the meetings is crucial. I think the public last month would have been informed a great deal about the progress situation you had to deal with. I think that was very crucial. I think what you do is very important. I think the citizens of San Francisco deserve that. I would like to know who does the Twitter, because I think one time on television, you would get the information out much more. Maybe you should ask how many people listen to the audio recordings of this body. I would be interested in the number of hits. I think that was a great question. But televising is very important. I think it's just part of modern society so that we can have information. I think having information out there gives us the best democracy we can have. And I would encourage you to do that. Please don't wait for this room to be changed. Please find the necessary ways of doing it. If another meeting room is available on another night, then please do that. I think it's one of those things that San Francisco citizens would really respond to. I think your message would go out in a much more clear fashion. And I think it's very, very important. And I would really encourage you to do that. Thank you very much.
I had one other thing I did mean to. We did put the proposed CFRO amendments on the website. And we'll probably have interested persons meeting at some point later. The commission, one of the things, it generated a lot of buzz when we posted it about the $500 campaign contribution limit. We don't necessarily know that you're going to want to do that. But the commission is required to revisit that on a regular basis. So it may be that you decide $500 should stay that way. So we're doing this because we have to, not because there's necessarily, and I don't want there to be a misunderstanding. The staff has posited an alternative that would make it automatic, but it will be up to the will of the commission to make the final determination on that.
Thank you, Mr. St. Croix. Items for future meetings? Do we take public comment on that too?
Yep.
Public comment on items for future meetings? Public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission? Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Meeting is adjourned.